now broadcasting in English.
Hi, and welcome to this weekend edition of Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. My name's Christian Falvey. Many thanks for tuning in. Starting off an excellent program for today, David Vaughan takes us to meet writer Robert Fulham on the dance floor in Czech Books. After that, in Screen Czech, we go behind the scenes at Barrandov Studios. And later on in our program, another trip through the Czech radio archives. All that ahead, so please stay tuned. The best-selling writer Robert Fulham has such an enthusiastic following in the Czech Republic that he's published several of his books here in Czech translation before they've even appeared at home. That includes his latest book, If You Love Me Still, Will You Love Me Moving? Its subtitle, Tales from the Century Ballroom, hints at its theme, that most passionate of ballroom dances, the tango. Last week, Robert Fulham was in Prague to promote the book and found time to pay a visit to the radio. David Vaughan met him.
Robert Fulham shot to international fame at the age of 50, having already enjoyed a varied career as pastor, teacher, painter, and even singing cowboy. His collection of stories and essays, All I Really Need to Know I Learned in Kindergarten, was published in 1988 and was an instant bestseller. The book embodies his seemingly simple philosophy of trying to see the world through the eyes of a child and has since been translated into over 20 languages. Fulham's subsequent books have the same life-affirming, cheerful take on life, and they seem to have struck a particular chord with Czech readers. He has become a regular visitor to this country, and if you visit his website, www.robertfulham.com, you'll find much that he has written about the Czech Republic. If Czechs have a soft spot for Fulham's writing, their feelings are requited. He describes Czechs as standing on an underlayer of toughness of spirit and dark, cynical humour that separates survivors from losers. And he points to the good soldier Švejk, Jaroslav Hašek's famous, irreverent comic novel of the First World War, as a source of inspiration. A rather more surprising inspiration, as we'll be hearing in this programme, is Jara Zimmermann, the universal and completely fictitious Czech genius and folk hero, brought to life by the two brilliant writer-actors Zdeněk Svěrák and Ladislav Smoljak. Robert Fulham's success in the Czech Republic owes much to Eva Slámová of the Argo Publishing House, who until her death at the end of last year promoted, edited and published his work. It was under her initiative that his novel Third Wish was published in Czech in 2004, before it even appeared in English. In the same spirit, his latest book, If You Love Me Still, Will You Love Me Moving?, has also been published in Czech. A few days ago, Robert Fulham came into the studios of Radio Wave here at Czech Radio, and I took the opportunity to talk to him. We began by talking about his new book.
Basically, I am a storyteller. And so if you look very carefully at the new novel, you will see that it is a series of short stories, and the subtitle is Tales from the Century Ballroom. So it's really the short stories holding it together.
Does it really exist, the
Yes, yes. The, in fact, the novel begins with a photograph of the front door of the Century Ballroom. It is the most famous place to dance in Seattle. And many of the people in the book are also real.
And you're a regular visitor of the ballroom, the Century Ballroom,
yes.
I understand.
I'm there two or three nights a week. And when I began writing the novel, the owner gave me essentially a freedom to go anywhere in the ballroom any time of day, behind the scenes or out front.
Is Aristo your alter ego?
Well, for anyone who writes this kind of book, it's autobiographical in that I had the experience of not knowing and learning to dance tango. So in that sense, it's very much, he's much better looking than I am, of course. And he met the love of his life while learning to tango. And I met the love of my life, my wife now, while learning to tango. And she is the one who did the illustrations for this novel. Real life is mixed up with fiction always.
You're best known for your book, All I Really Need to Know, I Learned in Kindergarten. Somebody who has that as their philosophy, how can they go on writing? Because isn't it also the case with your writing that everything you needed to know about writing, you also learned in kindergarten? So how do you find new things to write about, new ways of writing?
Well, I walk around in the world with my eyes and ears open, and the stories are there because I write about the stories of people. And if I don't see a story, I will ask someone, tell me your story, and the stories go on.
You've had very many different jobs, including being a barman, being a pastor. Did any of these particular jobs help you in this particular novel, for example, being a barman?
Yes, the character of Frida, the bartender, in this novel is based on my experience when I was a bartender when I was very young. And you learn a great deal about people when you are a bartender. People will tell a bartender what they will tell nobody else.
In your latest book, you often write that tango isn't just a dance, but it's a whole way of life. In what way is it the case? Is that because it's to do with migration?
Well, it has to do with immigration. It has to do with, it began as a music of the poor, of men dancing with men. It has to do with yearning for a better time. If you listen to the lyrics of the tango songs, they're all about wanting love and wanting better future, and it's a soul music of the Hispanic and Italian culture. And there's tango poetry, there's tango orchestral music. There's a very wide culture of tango.
When you started listening to tango, did it start having more meaning for you than American singer-songwriters, people like Johnny Cash or Bob Dylan?
When you translate the words into English, they're like American country Western music. I just got out of prison, my dog died, my girlfriend left me, woe is me. It's the same music. It sounds better in Spanish.
And what are the roots of your strong relationship to Czech culture?
People always ask me, why do the Czechs like my writing? And I say, my editor and my translator are better writers than I am. But I know why I like the Czechs. The Czechs are like a really good dark beer. Dark, bittersweet, and the next day after you've had Czechs, you feel a little strange but happy. And the women are like the beer, full-bodied.
I know that you've read Hašek's Švejk,
mm-hmm.
and in fact you've read it twice. Why is that?
Well, because that was the book that was recommended to me by my editor as the first one to read if you want to understand the Czech mentality. And then I learned about Jara Zimmerman and put it together, and I get it. In fact, the Czechs don't know this, but Jara Zimmerman invented tango, but he thought it was a dance for one person.
Your books are well known for their warmth, and they're also very optimistic. You avoid politics, and you don't have very many nasty characters in your books.
I'm not an optimist, and I'm not a pessimist. I'm a realist. And I know that life has the dark side, and many people write about the dark side. Not many people write about the other side, the lighter side. So that's what I focus on. But I know about death and fear and war and sorrow and pain, but that's not what I write about. My quarrel with the church is they never show Jesus laughing. And if he was a whole human being, then he must have laughed. So I don't want to deny that part of being human.
I've heard two pieces of information about you. That your one is that you're writing another book called Kindling for the Fire. Yeah. And the second one is that you're digging your own grave, literally. How should I interpret these two rumors?
The book is called Kindling for the Fire. It's coming. I'm also writing short plays. But I have not digging my own grave, but I own my grave. I know where. And I have made a box to put my ashes in. And I ask my children that when I am gone, what do you want? Because I don't care. And they said, "We never know where you are when you are alive. We want to know where you are when you are dead." So sometimes I visit that place to remind myself that life is short and I must keep it alive as long as I can.
David Vaughan there talking to writer and tango dancer Robert Fulham. This is Radio Prague. Now in this month's edition of Screen Check, Peter Smith goes behind the scenes of Prague's Barrandov Studios as it celebrates its 80th anniversary this year.
Hello and welcome to another Screen Check here on Radio Prague with me, Peter Smith. First of all, thanks for all the feedback about last month's first edition, particularly on the film and TV incentive scheme on offer to producers here in the Czech Republic. Just to let you know that the Film Council here will be defending the scheme against charges of inadequacy in the next programme. It's certainly an issue that has raised many hackles in the film community and not one that's likely to be resolved anytime soon, that's for sure. But in this month's show, we'll be taking a look behind the hallowed great facade of one of the Czech Republic's most famous institutions. Not a brewery, no, but Barrandov Studios, which is celebrating its 80th anniversary. I took the bus up the hill from Smíchov station to the front of the studios, where I was met by Jan Hrubek, Barrandov Studios' marketing manager. We started with a quick tour of the studio's massive sound stages, a mixture of old design and, as I would soon find out for myself, the very latest.
Now we are in the oldest building here at Barrandov. It's our old stages that was started to be built in 1931. So the first movie here at these stages was shot winter 32, 33.
And the actual original founding, I believe, was the uncle of President Václav Havel. He was involved.
It was his father and uncle's work. These two men were big, important businessmen of the era. And, well, they decided to be active not only in the business, but also in the cinema. And they chose the Barrandov Hill because it was completely clean. There was nothing on it. And they decided to build up the villa suburb.
All these beautiful villas around.
Yes, definitely. Like the corner for, let's say, rich people or something. Then they, chose Barrandov also as a possible Hollywood land, let's say, in Prague.
So the whole of the area was modeled itself on Hollywood. So the center was the film studio, and all these beautiful villas we see around were supposed to be connected to that, to attract people.
Something like that. We can say that for the construction of stages themselves, they were totally inspired in American film studios of the era. So this building was one of the most modern studio facilities in 1930s.
And from there, Jan whisked me off to see the crown jewel of Barrandov Studios at the moment, and one aimed at attracting big-budget productions.
Well, oh dear, we've walked into this massive space. You call this the Max Studio, is that right? And, well, it's quite clear why you do, and I believe this is only half of it.
Exactly the half of the building, because on the left side we have two more stages of a half size each of them. We can connect them to this big area I mentioned before.
And it's got a wonderful air conditioning system as well, or is it just natural? Because it's very cool in here. First of all, is it 5 years old or something you said before?
Opened in 2006.
Right. And since that time it's been used for...
The Narnia Chronicles or G.I. Joe.
How often is it in use, this facility? Obviously something so big it can't always be in use, can it? So
Quite often, mm-hmm. Quite often.
It actually looks like a very, very big school sports hall. And all it needs at either end are a couple of basketball hoops. Yeah? Mm-hmm. But the players would have to be very tall.
Definitely.
There's some big productions coming here, and you're not telling me what they are they? The new James Bond film, perhaps?
I can't.
I think they've got 5 locations for the shoot, possibly. I'm just wondering if Prague is one of those.
Well, no comment.
Okay. I'm not going to get a James Bond answer here. Okay. Say you had a big production working. How many people would be working in that place?
It depends.
Yeah.
You mean like the extras?
Everybody
or
together.
Workers.
Everybody. Workers. Yeah. You can. You've got room for thousands of extras there, haven't you? And
maybe I wouldn't say thousands, but hundreds.
Yeah. Definitely. You can CGI them now. Well, indeed. And from there, it was back to Jan's office. There, he told me more about how the history of Barrandov and the history of Czech cinema in general were inextricably linked.
The 30s, which we can call the golden era of Czech cinematography, and therefore of Barrandov itself, is full of really famous names of directors, actors, Martin Frič, Svatopluk Ineman, Vladimír Slavínský.
We could say that the cinema, the Czech movies, reflected the time itself, because the period between the wars was an optimistic time, economic growth in the country. Czechoslovakia was a relatively new country. This place was reflecting that.
Definitely. That's why we call it the Golden Age. I wouldn't say a copy, because the system was quite different, but we can say it was a sort of studio system like in Hollywood. Several companies managing their own directors, actors. Your listeners maybe know the names like Adina Mandlova, Lida Bárová, Hanna Vítová, Oldřich Lipský, a famous, I would say, romantic hero of the era, a Czech Hollywood.
And during that time, there were a lot of comedies which were done here, a lot of social dramas. A lot of them we see repeated. They're shown on Czech television, Sunday mornings. This really wonderful time for Czech film. I mean, I'm not Czech, but I can sit there on a Sunday morning and watch these films, and I think they're beautifully produced. They capture the atmosphere of the time, I think.
From the very beginning of Czech cinema, what dominated are the comedies, the romantic dramas, melodramas, entertainment was, well, soft themes.
Well, those early heydays at Barrandov came to an end, and instead the studio was used to produce Nazi occupation propaganda films during World War II. In fact, some very large sound stages were built by the Germans at that time. Then, after liberation, the studio was quickly nationalised. Jan Hrubek again.
After the war, was 46 or 47, by the decree of Czech President Edvard Beneš, all the Czech film industry was put in the hands of state.
Now that is very interesting, because as an outside observer, we would automatically think that it was in 1948-49, after the communist putsch, that this happened. But the Czechoslovak government made moves to do this before, and that indicates that governments had very clearly seen the power of film to influence the population, and they wanted some control over it.
Well, generally we can say that the state, like I would say, felt this power of the cinema, and, well, of course, the power of money that is producing.
Nevertheless, Barrandov played its part in the so-called Czech New Wave of the 1960s. Czech film directors working at Barrandov at this time included Miloš Forman, Jiří Menzel, Věra Chytilová, Jan Němec, Ivan Paser and Jan Kadar. Closely observed trains by Menzel and the shop on the main street by Kloss and Kadar each won the Best Foreign Language Film at the Academy Awards, and Forman's The Fireman's Ball and Loves of a Blonde achieved Oscar nominations. But in 1968, the Warsaw Pact tanks rolled in and the Prague Spring of the 1960s was rolled back. The industry was once again in flux.
Normalisation, this period we call it. Now, directors, therefore, and people coming to work here at Barrandov, they had to be, therefore, quite creative. They had to do things which would not upset the regime. But did it mean that, naturally, they took a turn towards fairy tales, historical dramas, children's stories, comedies? It affected the kinds of films being made, is that right?
In fact, most of them, yes. with denormalization, we can say that the directors had to choose. Either you will do what you are set to do, or you will just change your focus. Propaganda movies, really optimistic, socialism, building comedies. Here we go again, comedies is the Czech nature. I would say tragical comedies.
So basically, nothing wrong with the world, everything's happy.
Everything doesn't have to be happy, but we can smile on it, because it's funny. It was the 50s and the first half of 60s that marked really this kind of movies. You know, absolutely, I would say, loyal to the state ideology, definitely. With all these things of censorship, state control, even of self-censorship on the level of authors, scriptwriters, etc.
But inevitably, the good times did come again. Although, in Barronoff's case, the modern era of its film production started shortly before the Velvet Revolution, thanks to one of their own, director Miloš Forman and his film Amadeus.
It was, in fact, the Amadeus who said to everyone in the international film business, hey, look what they are able to do in Prague, at Barronoff. So it, I would say, started with Amadeus, the new era of the studios. And then after the Velvet Revolution in the 1990s, it was, I would say, starting with Mission Impossible movie in 1995.
And indeed, Mission Impossible came back again for the fourth part, which will be in our cinemas sometime very soon. Thanks there to Jan Hrubek of Barrandov Studios, and no doubt I'll be back again at the studios sometime in the near future. Quickly, on to movie news. Italian broadcaster RAI 1 is currently shooting Olimpiade Segreti, or the Secret Olympics, on location at Terezin, Doxani and other nearby locations. Production on the two-part TV film began on September the 5th and wraps later this week. The film story is based on actual events which took place during the Second World War. In 1944, prisoners of war in a German prison camp decided to organise a version of the Olympic Games, even as the war continued around them. The prisoners' plan would give them the opportunity to celebrate their respective nationalities in the Olympic spirit and provide a cover for an escape. There's a crew of 15 Italian members, and they're assisted in the Czech Republic by 70 local film professionals and several dozen more service providers. Now, Prague is a city famed for its ghost stories, and a new romantic psychological thriller entitled Simply Prague tells the story of three Mumbai architecture students who come to the Czech capital in order to explore firsthand its buildings and get a taste of its history. As well as shooting on location in many of Prague's famous landmarks and some more clandestine ones, cast and crew have travelled further afield to make the most of the country's extraordinary locations, with Kutná Hora's morbidly fascinating Bone Church serving as another characterful location. So we're out of time here on Screen Check for this month. Please join me, Peter Smith, again soon for another look at the world of filmmaking in the Czech Republic. Until then, keep watching.
Many thanks to Peter Smith. Now, as ever of a Saturday, it's another trip down memory lane, or rather through the halls of the Czech radio archives. Here's David Vaughan.
We are a small country with a great tradition of freedom. We shall not give it up. Whenever you have doubts, I ask you very earnestly to give us the benefit of the doubt. We are a good bet in the long run.
The unmistakable voice of Jan Masaryk, the son of Czechoslovakia's first president, Tomáš Garrigue Masaryk, and his American wife, Charlotte. Here he is addressing American servicemen in Plzeň in a tone of great optimism after his return home in 1945. During the wartime occupation, Masaryk had served as Czechoslovak foreign minister in exile in London, and he remained in the post after the war, deciding to stay on even after the communist coup of February 1948. His immense popularity meant that the communists put up with his presence, although his pro-Western views were totally at odds with the rest of the government. Masaryk himself was tormented by doubts about his decision, but when he spoke briefly to Czechoslovak radio a few days after the coup on March 5, 1948, he did not let his fears be known.
Těším se na tuto spolupráci vůbec, jako se těším na spolupráci v této nové vládě, do které dnes právě poprvé vstupuju a vás srdečně zdravím.
He had few words, seeming to be in a great hurry, but he did say that he was looking forward to working in the new government. 5 days later, Jan Masaryk was dead. His body was found dressed in pyjamas under the bathroom window of his apartment in the Foreign Ministry. Subsequent investigations have all concluded that it was suicide, but suspicions linger that someone, maybe in Moscow, maybe in the new government itself, wanted him dead. With more than a dose of cynicism, Czechoslovakia's new Stalinist rulers turned Masaryk's funeral into a huge public event, broadcasting his interment at the family grave in Lány, west of Prague, in a tone of deepest mourning.
V bělosném srdci nad rovem jsou vepsána slova čest, mír, světlo. Zde tedy se končí životní pout Jana Masaryka. Taková byla cesta. Když za války vzkázal Jan...
Among those who spoke at the funeral was the man who took Masaryk's place as foreign minister, Vladimir Klementis. Ironically, Klementis had played a decisive role in organizing the communist coup that directly or indirectly had led to Masaryk's death.
Mal rád ľudí a veril im, ba bol k mnohým až príliš dôverčivý.
He loved people, Klementis stated, and trusted them. In many ways, we might say that he was too trusting. 2 years later, these words were to come back to haunt Foreign Minister Klementis himself. The revolution was beginning to eat its own. In 1950, he was forced to resign, accused of bourgeois nationalism, and was hanged after a show trial in December 1952. Subsequently, his image was carefully removed from the most famous photograph of the 1948 coup.
That was David Vaughan with From the Archives, wrapping up Radio Prague's English program for today. If you'd like to listen again or recommend the program to others, we are always on the internet for you. Simply turn to our website at radio.cz. We're always happy to discuss your questions and comments. You can write to us by email at english@radio.cz, on Facebook or Twitter under Radio Prague, or, of course, with a good old-fashioned letter to Vinohradská 12, 12099, Prague. From me, Christian Falvey, thanks for listening, and nashledanou. Thank you.
écoutez Radio Prague.